On the hunt for lost ROI? Chart a course and find hidden profit potential with Acuron Corn Herbicide. It's the only herbicide strong enough to bury competing weeds and help you unearth 5 to 15 more bushels per acre. How's that for hidden riches? Uncover the real value of Acuron at Acuron-Herbicide.com. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by SearchPress and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Liz Konecki is an Ibethan-based artist whose public intervention works encourage people to express their views and their perspectives of place through the method of embroidering onto maps. This is the second part of the conversation with Liz, and in this part we dive a bit deeper into her backstory. We discuss how she got into stitching, the challenges faced by textile artists in the art world. We talk about how needlework is maybe not considered high art, that old chestnut, and Liz shares some of her experiences creating public art projects. And we also talk about the funding process and things to consider there. As is always the way with the second part of these interviews, we also find out the kind of music, books, and podcasts that Liz is interested in. And we find out about her other form of artistic expression, which is something pretty unique and really pretty interesting. If you've not listened to the first part of The Needle Exchange, then be sure to check that out so that you can understand more about Liz's fantastic urban fabric project. And if you want to connect with Liz, you'll find all her details in the show notes, of course. Thanks for listening to Needle Exchange. Thanks for being a part of it. If you have enjoyed this show, do please share it with somebody who is like-minded. It's really lovely to see the number of downloads increase and to know that I'm connecting with more of you to talk about this art form that we all love so much. I'll be back next week with another conversation with another artist. But until then, enjoy the show. So yeah, let's dive into this then. So you did fine arts and French literature.
I sure did. You've researched me very well.
What got you to that point? How did it all begin?
I used to be a painter. Started out as a painter doing portraits mostly, and then I went to graduate school. And I started, just exploding in different directions with installation, with performance, with participatory things, strange installations with fruits and vegetables. I mean, all kinds of things.
Can you just explain a strange installation with fruits and vegetables, please?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess like my thesis show was all about this kind of, about avocados and lemons and everything in between the natural avocado and lemon and an artificial one. So the whole spectrum, strange.
I like this. Come on, no. Right, so for instance, just to explain, right, I worked out a long time ago that cake has an anti-gelling agent and that jelly has an anti-caking agent. Which means that there's a spectrum of jelly and cake, right? And you're like, I don't like, so it feels to me like you're saying there's a spectrum that's got avocados on lemons on it.
Sure.
I need to know.
Well, I mean, there's a spectrum for me between like the natural and the fully not natural and mm-hmm. you know, the artificial, the natural, and then like, what are some of the things that we use now? Like, you know, grafted things and then cloned things and then genetically modified things. Like, they're all on a spectrum, right? So I had a lot of growing plants in my show. I had a lot of fruits. I had a lot of strange little dolls. Yeah, it was weird.
I love it. I love the sound of it.
But yeah, I would say a lot of that was inspired by this artist, and I don't know how to say his name, but he's quite famous, Rirkrit Tiruvanija. Okay. Never actually heard his name spoken, so I don't know how to say it. but he was doing, and this was a while ago that I was doing my grad school, like 20 years ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. So he was like, okay, I'm going to have a show in a museum in Berlin, and it's just making a pot of curry and all of us eating it. Mm. You know, mm. This was the work that he was doing that was like mind blowing. So it's just about that life is art, mm. and totally, totally participatory. And so in a way that also influenced what I'm doing now, right? Just first of all, getting away from things like traditional mediums like paint or something. I guess that freed me from that, right? I was like, oh, mm. I can use avocados or I can use needlework.
All right.
In fine arts, let's say, right?
And do you, because what you're saying is like the maps, the people making the maps, and you don't have to overstate it, do you? But they're participating in an art project and therefore they're applying their artisticness to it. That's all right. Mm-hmm. But also then you're forsaking the end product. Like, it's not for you to say what the end product is going to be. And that's part of the art as well, isn't it? Is like with the curry, if everybody's making a curry, hopefully the curry is going to taste like a curry, but who's to say?
Sure. I mean, there's a certain amount of letting go.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And so was that part of your MFA?
Yeah, that was the MFA, right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So then where did you, because you started doing this stuff around about 2004, I believe.
Right. So, you know, I got my MFA, then I taught for a couple of years in some schools in the US, and then I moved to Spain. So like I said, I moved to Barcelona, mm. and I started working with a couple of Colombian artists. Well, one was an architect, one was an artist. At that time in Barcelona, there was an incredible explosion of architecture and urban planning concepts everywhere going around. So I connected with a lot of architects at that time. I think the mapping is obviously quite connected to architecture, or at least mm-hmm. architects love maps. So yeah. We had a connection there. That was Jimena Covaleda. And then the artist, she's one of my favorite artists of all time. She now lives again in Medellin, in Colombia, but her name is Margarita Pineda. And when she was living in Barcelona, as many people do who are not from the country they're living in, she was working cleaning the airport.
Okay.
Right? So in her free time, she was doing art, but the most incredible art. And she was using also her life, her work at the airport to inform her art. So she took these huge, these huge fabric mops that they use at the airport that are like a meter wide that okay. they kind of just sweep the floor with. They become disgusting. And she collected all these and then embroidered with gold thread into them, like all the months, the days of the months and the right. weeks and days that she was working that job. Just a beautiful artwork, really.
Yeah. And at the same time, an infographic, right?
As well. Yeah. A calendar. Mm. Yeah. Mm. And so, yeah, with those two, we started doing these participatory mapping things in Barcelona.
Hmm. And you said before about your grandma doing quilting being an early textile influence. Had you stitched as a child, or was stitching something you got into more latterly?
Yeah, so she taught me to sew, I would say. And then I didn't really do much of it for a few years.
Hmm.
And then I kind of rediscovered it after I realized with my MFA that I could use any tool that I want to make my art. So, for me, it's something that I love to do. And it's also a tool that works really well for what I want to do.
Mm. Do you think with like fine arts, sometimes it's more acceptable to use a curry as an art form than it is to use a needle as an art form?
Interesting. Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, maybe, because there is this stigma still, of course, against these so-called women's handicraft things, right? So in some ways, maybe you're right. Curry is...
Because it's like a really avant-garde thing to do, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's like so left field that people would be like, well, that has to be art because I can't fathom why it's happening otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard you talk about it as well on your podcast, right? It's a lot of textile artists struggle with this, right? Like, I think one of your guests said, they wanted to work with the gallery and it was like, they're like, oh, but we already have a needlework artist, so we can't have you too.
Yeah. I think that happens a lot, and it's an old one. It's even happened, like, I remember I was on telly in the UK a couple of times, and after that people were like, oh, there's these different things you can do. But, like, when it comes to craft programs, there's a lady called Kirsty Allsop that does a show about craft, and they went, oh, but we've got Kirsty Allsop. Yeah, we have 150 cooking programs, and that seems to be fine. But with the crafting one, they go, no, we've got the crafting lady now. Do you know what I mean? As though, like, because like, overriding the fact that cooking is craft and gardening is craft and life is craft and paying attention to the world is craft, they would just say, yeah, no, we've got that. I was just like, what?
So true. Really? I mean, I think you've experienced it more than I have, just in the sense that you've connected to so many textile artists who have experienced that in one way or the other, so...
I think it's one of the things I love about doing the podcast is having these conversations, and I'm not trying to steer the agenda, but a lot of themes come up again and again and again. And the challenge of like art versus craft, needlework as an art form, that thing's going to be perpetual, I think. Mm. I mean, it might change in the end, but like I say, I always find it funny that you can duct tape a banana to a wall and sell it for 100 grand, but someone cross stitches something that, you know, takes 100 hours, and they don't, you know, people.
And that's not art. That's not art. Yeah, yeah. No, you're so right.
Game playing, isn't it? It's a funny thing that. Then one of the projects that you did, let me just find the information, was about wallpaper and tiles and bricks, and you were looking at buildings that had been somewhat deconstructed so that you could see the tiles and the walls. And it made me think of two things. One, it made me think of downstairs in my house, underneath the stairs, we've got some wallpaper from the 1930s, which is completely charming. And it's like a little memory of the past, which you don't see very often, but I love that kind of thing. And then I once helped build a straw bale house, and they like to have what are called truth windows, where you leave a little bit of the lime render off so that people can see that it's made of straw underneath. And seeing the pieces of work that you were doing, looking at that, made me think about like truth windows and stuff.
Uh-huh. I'd never heard of a truth window, but I like the idea. I mean, yeah, all of that work was also in Barcelona with the bricks and everything. Mm. You know, that city is constantly under construction and deconstruction. And so because of the construction of the buildings, there's only one wall in between each building. So that's why when they tear down one building, you see the wallpaper, the paint, various objects that have been left hanging on the wall of the building that's been torn down. You know, a toilet paper roll still stuck on the wall, an oven mitt 5 stories up that's still hanging on the wall. But it's also about that finding these stories about a city, finding all the different layers of history and memories. Yeah.
Mm, I really love it. I just love the idea of being able to look at a building and you can just see, you know, you can leave, let your own imagination run riot, but you can look at 12 different scenarios just presented to you without any other commentary. Once, when I grew up in a town called Bedford, and we had a massive cinema. I think at one point it might have had like the biggest cinema screen in Bedford. It was like an old school, not biggest cinema screen in the UK. Sorry, it was an old school cinema that had like a row of seats in a circle. And they knocked it down. But when they knocked it down, the first kind of thing they did was take away the wall that had the screen. So you could walk past it and just see these rows of seats. It was amazing. It was like looking as though, you know, hi, I'm a cinema screen. And now I get to see all the seats there. It's just like some kind of amphitheater, something like that. It was amazing. But I love those kind of things. I love the, because we've got little boxes and they all kind of look the same. And then everybody puts their personal spins on them. And I guess, again, it's another form of psychogeography, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Different ways of seeing a place.
What's needlework like in the Spanish context?
That's a good question. To be honest, I haven't, at least in Ibiza, there's not a lot of needlework that's kind of still being practiced traditionally. There are a few very elderly women doing some lace with the bobbins. But, you know, I mean, any kind of embroidery has not really survived here, and in Barcelona I also am not really familiar.
What drew you to Spain?
It was just like I just love living in Europe, so and Barcelona, like I said, at that time was just an incredibly creative explosion. So that was really exciting.
And then Ibiza is a magical island that's run over by loads of ravers for about 6 months of the year. Is that right?
Nothing against ravers. I love ravers too. Obviously, you know, I also like electronic music, or else I would have gone crazy here years ago.
Right.
But Ibiza is like, to be honest, I just got tired a little bit of living so much in the city. Barcelona does not have a lot of green space, and Ibiza is a lot of nature, actually. So this is what is exciting for me here, as well as having a really international community as well. It's like living in a countryside, but having everyone super open-minded and from all the countries of the world.
Because I get, lots of people will go to Ibiza and they'll have their holidays and they'll have their experiences. But, quite a few people remain, don't they? And I might be casting aspersions here. There's quite a lot of hippies in Ibiza.
There's quite a hippie population. And there has been since the 60s. There were a lot of draft dodgers that came from the U.S. That kind of started that movement here, and then
I would like to go back there again, and now I know you're there, I'm totally bringing the kids over. We're gonna stay up.
Oh my god, let's come stitch together.
That would be good
on the beach.
I do another question, which is probably a bit of a dry question, but I'm interested in it nonetheless. Presumably when you do your, you call them, is it intervention art, is that kind of how you phrase the pieces you do, something like that?
I'm not sure if I have a I call them interventions, sure.
Yeah, when you do those, then is that something that you seek funding for to be able to go and do?
It has depended, but in many of the places I have sought funding, either through government, usually through government, or some kind of art festival.
Right.
Or arts organization. And it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. It's not like I make my living on doing the urban fabric. But but I usually at least try to fund the flights, the accommodation, you know, if I'm lucky, a bit of artist fee. But
And I just wondered, really, because you've been doing it quite a long time and evidently have done it quite successfully, I just wondered if you had any, like, top tips for anybody
who might be thinking they'd like to do kind of public projects like that. Because I think it's one thing to like make your own stuff, try and sell it via social media, all those classic things, or try and get into shows and exhibitions. But what you're doing is different. It's that kind of like public art. It's a different mindset. And I just wondered what you could offer for people.
Yeah, I think it depends a little bit on the country you're in and kind of how much support the government gives for things like that. And each place is totally different. Like Barcelona was a dream and Ibiza is not a dream right. in that aspect. So, I think it really depends. I have a friend in Brazil who actually right now she's kind of using my urban fabric project as an inspiration to do something in her city there.
Right.
And she has received funding from the government, which I'm super happy for her about that. Yeah, and actually like that. It's kind of like, this is sort of a technique that I feel is really useful for people and can be really positive. So there's a few people I'm sort of consulting with, let's say, who I'm kind of helping them to design something like that where they are. And and of course, it will have their own flavor, you know, and their own twist on it. But I think it's something that is beneficial to people.
Yeah, no, I always think it's a great project. And I think over here, you find a lot of, like, say, for instance, the town I live in, Crewe, was a railway making town for the longest time, and railway industries come and go. So a lot of the spaces that used to be factories are now housing developments where new people have built over the top of them. But there's this whole like layer of history that's really important to a lot of the people who are now getting on quite a bit in their age. But capturing those stories and capturing that perspective on the town is something that I think is really important, and something that I don't think people do enough because we're all too busy, you know, to take a proper snapshot or whatever. But that's where I've always loved your concept, because I think it gives people that opportunity in a way that's more meaningful. I kind of feel like it should just be mandatory.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, in general, I think participatory mapping and things, you know, you said you come a bit from the urban planning part of the government in a way, right?
I've seen inside that, you know, I understand a bit about it.
And it's becoming more popular, the participatory aspect, you know, of not just building a bunch of things without asking the citizens what should be built and how and where, right? So it's becoming obvious and more popular to do participatory techniques. Now, they're not usually using embroidery, right? But some kind of participatory technique to talk to people about what should happen.
Yeah, because I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Rather cynically over here, a lot of the housing estates that are built by the same 9 companies, who, as far as I can tell, are using AI to maximize the number of houses it's possible to get inside a shoebox. But that becomes the motivation there, whereas actually we forget that it's humans that live in these things. And back in the day, towns would organically grow outwards, wouldn't they, as needs must. So I think it's interesting, and perhaps it is something where if people are interested in their environment, maybe they should seek out or have conversations with like planning departments or even like housing developers often have to have like public art, I think, as part of the deal, don't they? So maybe there's spaces in there that people could play with.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Where are you going to be mapping next? Do you know?
Yes, so I'll be mapping here in Ibiza again. I actually have a massive project where I'll be doing, I mean, I hope it happens. Yeah, it's a project at its very beginning, but I'm doing an 8x8 meter map stitched. Yeah, but it would be a project where I'm also collaborating with different people. I would love to use wool from the island, which is not really has not really been worked with. People just throw the wool away after they shear their sheep, generally. I've been into natural dyeing, so I think I would work with a natural dyer as well. Yeah, I'm kind of stretching into this. I've always worked with usually threads from the store, but now I'm starting to get interested in the natural dyes and the hand spun things. Or I haven't used any hand spun things yet, but I would like to.
Yeah, because actually then that grounds the project even further, isn't it? It's like you're making a piece of art from the island that you're mapping. It's like a holistic approach to it.
Right. That
does feel like very much the evolution, because like if you look on your Instagram, there's as much about mapping as there's you just exploring the environment and being part of the environment and finding your natural connections with it. And I guess this is an unfolding of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, nice. Right. I'm going to move on to the tough questions now.
Ooh.
Yeah, let's do this. Do you have a favorite book?
These are the hardest questions. It's true.
I
have a book which I have not read in many years, but I would say it's my favorite. It's in French. It's from Guadeloupe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Pluie et vent sur tel ou mes miracles. And it's just a story about a magical story about the struggles of a girl there. Growing up.
What's the title again?
For some reason, it really touched me. Pluie et vent sur tel ou mes miracles. So, rain and wind on tel ou mes miracles. That was her name in the book.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah.
I was thinking, at the moment, I'm trying to read 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And I dip into it. This sounds daft, right? It's got a lot of words on the page. So I only do about 2 pages a night before I fall asleep. But you know, earlier you were saying about, what are you saying about that lady that came over and then became the richest person on the island?
In Fez.
Yeah, that's it. That sounds like the sort of thing that would happen in that book. Because I was reading it like last night and 2 people nonchalantly died, you know, in extreme circumstances.
Yeah, completely surreal. Yeah.
Absolutely love it. Love it.
Magical realism, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I am enjoying it because it's just a sort of throwaway thing. It seems to. Have you read it? Do you know it?
I have, yeah. Many years ago, though. Mm.
Yeah. But it sort of bips a bit around the time. And that within about 3 sentences, someone will have lived and died, but then we'll come back to them again later or something. It's just like.
Right.
It's very entertaining. Okay, good. Book then. Music. Let's just talk about music. Favorite band or favorite album? That sort of thing.
Right. I don't have a favorite one.
No.
I like all kinds. Like I do love electronic music, as I mentioned, but I also love kind of really depressive music, like, I don't know, The Magnetic Fields, Yo La Tengo. Maybe these things kind of from the 90s. I like Cat Power, but I also love salsa music. I love salsa dancing. So if I really need to get like pumped up, I put on something like that.
Do you indulge in your island's electronic situation much when it comes to dance music?
I do. Not so much going to the clubs anymore, although I did do that in my first years. But you know, everybody's, I would say a quarter of my friends are DJs. That's just how it is here. So everybody, you know, in their private house parties are, you know, that's what's being played.
What kind of genres really float your boat there?
You know, I'm not even like an expert. I used to be super into what was called minimal, but now I kind of like all kinds of things. I don't even know how you call them.
Yeah, it's a bit weird, I suppose. I listen to a thing called Mixcloud and they kind of break the genres down a little bit. So I'm a bit more like, I know the difference between, say, minimal techno or soulful house or whatever, you know, but you might like, there's a DJ I really like who's called Colin Curtis, and he's been DJing for like 60 years. He was like involved in the northern soul scene over here, but at the moment what he plays a lot of is jazz dance fusion music, which is very much that kind of Latino vibe, but then also has a kind of housey element to it or whatever. So I know if I really need to get some emailing done, then I'll be putting that on.
Occasionally
dancing in my office to myself there, thankfully.
Amazing.
I mean, is there like an album that you will turn to? Do you like any of the classic albums or any of those sorts of things?
I mean, I can't even ever remember names of albums, you know, but I've had, you know, many years. I was super into Led Zeppelin. I had, I don't know. I'm super into Sufjan Stevens. I like his Illinois album a lot. All of his things, actually.
Has he just started coming back again or something? I feel like he might have a new album out for the first time in a long time. Or am I
Maybe.
Just imagining that?
I'm not sure, but I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, I've got a couple of his albums, and I sort of... what happens is I hear about music and then I download it and then forget I've got it. And then the other day I put one of his albums on. I was just like, oh, man, this is great. I need to think it. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes they're the right kind of things as well. Like his music, I think, would actually be brilliant for listening to in the car when you're driving because it kind of goes on a journey and that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Do you have a favorite film?
Also, not really. Also not really a favorite film. I do like movies. I like that. But I don't know. I actually used to try to watch movies as I was embroidering in some of the really long stretches. But you just can't really watch anything. So I think that, you know, the fact that podcasts were invented is amazing for people stitching because it's the only thing you can really do while you're stitching.
Yeah. I was going to ask whether you listen to music when you're stitching, but I guess you listen to podcasts then.
I listen to music and to podcasts,
Right.
Yeah.
And do you mix between them? Like if you've got a bit of a hard graft, if you're in that doldrums of like hours 70 to 80 or something.
I mean, you know, sometimes, like I said, you need to be like pumped up, like, ooh, like, let's do this. Or sometimes, you need a podcast where you get a little bit lost in the story to help you pass the time, right?
So come on then, let's go. Favorite podcast, Needle Exchange is a given. You don't have to say it any more than that, obviously. What's your number two podcast?
Right now, it's Haptic and Hugh, which I already told you about. I'm obsessed with her, and her voice is really nice as well. And then I really like the Huberman Lab podcast about science, like about, trying to be healthy. It's kind of also like stitching is not the healthiest, maybe, hobby because it's a lot of sitting.
I think stitching and yoga need to be put together. I think that's the way to survive it, right?
Totally. You definitely need stretching and things. And like the Huberman guy, he said the other day, you know, if you don't have time to go exercise, just like run up and down the stairs a couple of times. So sometimes in the middle of embroidering, I'll just run down to the gym. I live on the 7th floor, so I'll just run down and then run up and then just keep stitching.
Yeah. No, that's a great idea, isn't it?
And it makes me feel at least a little bit like I'm getting my blood moving. So
yeah. When I've done a couple of talks at the Royal School of Needlework to like the degree students, who a lot of them are sort of, you know, degree students, so in their 20s or whatever. And I was always just saying to them, I was like, for God's sake, just stretch. I know you're young and you don't know that you need it, but I'm like, for the sake of your future self, just every 20 minutes, just look in the opposite direction to the one you've been looking at. All of that.
Totally. It's such good advice. And no one ever taught me anything like that. I mean, when I was in art school and I was painting all the time, I used to get horrible back pains. And I would say even that's slightly why I stopped painting, because I just couldn't deal with the particular muscle pain that would come into my upper back. So, gosh, that's like a whole discipline, is like exercise for stitchers and for artists.
I might build an online course for it, charge 100 quid. Now I remember someone once told me as well, there was like some neck exercises that you could do where you like you look left and right as far as you can, and you do that 10 times, then you kind of tilt your ears upwards about 10 times, and then you have to look forwards and backwards. And I remember the first time I did it, and I did the tilt in my ear thing, I just done it now, like my neck was making all these cracking noises because it was like the first time I'd unlocked something. I was like, it's amazing.
Yeah, you know,
and
it's
then really
good.
Like rolling your head around because you just don't do enough of that sort of stuff. I was just like, oh, that's really good.
Well, that feels good. Thanks.
It's a shame this isn't going out on video now, is it? Right then. Okay, so the final question then. Can you tell me one interesting fact that not a lot of people know about Liz Kinnicky?
Okay. I was thinking about it and I'm not even sure what it could be, but. There's like one thing that many people know, but many people who know me as a stitcher don't know.
Okay, I like
which is that a whole other branch of my art is using artistic swimming as a tool rather than stitching.
Oh, okay. Let's go. Let's dive in. Dive in. See what I did there. Let's dive into this.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, COVID was happening. I was lucky enough to not be like working a job in the sense that I had a lot of hours in the day. I know some people had very hard times, and but I had the luck to be able to get bored a bit. And I often find that's the biggest luxury as an artist, is to be able to get a little bit bored so you can create something new, to have a little bit of space, to create some space. So I started swimming, and because I used to do synchronized swimming when I was a teenager. So it's kind of a skill that you know has degraded over time for sure, but it's there. It's kind of like riding a bike. And I started to make little videos and to try to connect with nature with this kind of dance, but while swimming. So I do a bit of that. Like next week I'm in a show where I'll be swimming in the sea, and I've built a replica of a lighthouse, which I'll be basically swimming on my back with this lighthouse coming out of my torso. Just that.
Yeah, fair play. If you can do it with a curry, I'm pretty sure you can do it with a lighthouse, is what we're discovering here, right?
That's the point. That's the point. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, can you tell me a bit about what's it like doing synchronized swimming? What's that like?
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful exercise for one. So actually, it's a great contrast to my stitching, mm-hmm. right? In the sense that I'm moving my body a lot more. Mm. And what I'm doing is I'm not doing it in pools like is usually done. I'm doing it just in nature. So like here in Ibiza, I'm part of an art collective. We're three women and two of us are swimming. And a friend of mine is designing incredible costumes. And the third friend is filming us from above with a drone. So we're, you know, the seas here are incredibly clear. Luckily, we still have, knock on wood, very clear water in Ibiza. And so you can see the bottom of the sea under us from above, right? It's absolutely gorgeous. And so it's, you know, swimming in the sea, it's different. You have waves and jellyfish and coldness and you know, all kinds of different challenges to work with. But I just see it as another tool, like stitching is, or like making a curry is, or whatever it is.
And the funny thing is, in the same way as you can take a map to Morocco and the community are the participants in that and shape the direction of it, your swimming project, I guess the sea is the participant and somewhat shapes the direction of it as well, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you have to work with her, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I've seen some of the images on your Instagram of that, and I'm both amazed by the beauty and deeply, deeply jealous. Just going to come out and say it now. Has to be that way. It looks absolutely lush. And there's some really lovely photos that you've done, I think, of like from underneath the water, but the light coming through the water. And it's almost like some kind of marbling abstract effect, the way it's like playing and the angles you choose to make some really interesting, like abstract imagery that people are like, would be familiar with, but wouldn't be familiar with.
Well, so now when you come to Ibiza, we'll go swimming in the sea together. That's what we'll do.
Very good. You know, I'll have potentially an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old with me, so it won't be as relaxed.
Perfect.
Yeah. I'm gonna have a chat with my wife because we've been to Ibiza before. I'm gonna be like, right, we're in here.
Now's the time. Yeah.
That'd be amazing. Hey Liz, thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Thank you so much. What a fun chat. And finally, I get to meet you.
finally, at last, meeting of titans. Happy days, happy days. Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.